From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Monday, January 23rd, 2017. And on this day, a Southern Maine casino referendum will be on the November ballot. We'll look at what's behind the campaign and how the proposed replacement for the Affordable Care Act could affect Maine. That's all ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins joined Louisiana Republican Senator Bill Cassidy today to unveil their proposal to replace the Affordable Care Act. Collins says the Patient Freedom Act of 2017 would give states and patients more choices and increase access to quality, affordable health care. But advocates in Maine say the devil's in the details, and at this point, it's not clear whether the proposal can live up to its promises. Patty White has more.
The Patient Freedom Act offers states three choices. Option number one, keep the Affordable Care Act, along with its subsidies, Medicaid expansion, and individual and employer mandates. Skipping ahead to option number three, states could forego any federal involvement with health insurance. In between is option number two, which Senator Susan Collins suspects will be the most popular.
Which we call the default option.
The default option would give states federal money to enroll people who can't access health insurance into a standard plan. These would be high-deductible plans with basic pharmaceutical coverage, plus some preventive care.
It would be financed through health savings accounts.
The federal government would help states fund these health savings accounts by providing the same amount of money they qualify for under the Affordable Care Act, including for Medicaid expansion.
Whether or not they have chosen to do so.
The Patient Freedom Act would maintain consumer protections, like allowing children to stay on their parents' insurance until age 26, ban lifetime limits on insurance policies, and prohibit discrimination against people with pre-existing conditions. Collins says her bill would also prevent a gap in coverage because the law would be phased in by 2020.
In fact, our goal is to expand coverage to those nearly 30 million Americans who still don't have coverage under the Affordable Care Act.
By covering more people, plus provisions for cost transparency in the bill, Collins says the Patient Freedom Act will also help stem soaring health care costs, which the Affordable Care Act has failed to do. But Emily Brostek of Consumers for Affordable Healthcare says there are still too many unknowns about Collins' proposal.
What are we looking at? Because the ACA has, for all its faults, has set a pretty high bar.
Brostek wants to see hard numbers that show the default plan would actually provide more and better coverage. While she's glad to see a concrete proposal that recognizes everyone should have a basic level of coverage, she isn't clear how that would work. How would people enroll, she asks? How high will their premiums and deductibles be? Along with the flexibility this proposal gives states, says Brostek, may come some risks.
Is there some kind of guardrail that would make sure that states weren't making things worse for people?
Democratic State Representative Drew Gattine, who has served as co-chair of Maine's Health and Human Services Committee, wonders if this proposal will ultimately shift some of the federal government's costs back to states.
It's got some elements of per capita caps and block grants. And I just worry that, you know, knowing that we have an aging population, knowing that we have some really growing health care needs among people with disabilities, and obviously we have this awful opioid and heroin crisis. I just think we really need to look very carefully at these types of proposals.
A spokeswoman for Maine's Department of Health and Human Services did not respond to requests for comment. Republican Senator Eric Brakey, the co-chair of Maine's Health and Human Services Committee, issued a written statement saying he's encouraged by Senator Collins' plan, which, quote, puts states and free market competition at the forefront of determining what works best for the little guy. Collins says she knows that her proposal is not perfect, and she's open to refinements. But she says she hopes the elements of the Patient Freedom Act will prove attractive enough to win over the 8 Democratic votes it needs to get through the Senate. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
A campaign that spent more than $3 million to convince Maine voters to put a proposal for a casino in southern Maine on the ballot has done just that. Steve Missler reports the proposal would benefit a controversial international casino developer and that the effort has so far operated outside the norms of a traditional campaign.
The group behind the successful drive to legalize marijuana spent over $2.5 million last year. It put up yard signs, answered press inquiries, and otherwise operated like a standard campaign. The same goes for backers of the four other ballot initiatives that voters acted upon last year. But the Horse Racing Jobs Fairness campaign has had a different MO. Already it spent $1 million more than the marijuana campaign, but only to collect enough signatures to get on the ballot. It has yet to spend any money on the actual campaign, and organizers have not been responsive to press inquiries, and that includes requests for comments today.
I think the whole process has been pretty shady from the start.
Democratic Representative Louis Lucchini from Ellsworth has been a critic of the proposal since it was launched 2 years ago. He's criticized the campaign's aggressive and ultimately unsuccessful attempt to gather enough signatures for last year's ballot. And Lucchini is also concerned about the motive of the campaign, its secretive tactics, and the fact that it would benefit the casino developer who first brought gambling to Maine 16 years ago. That man's name is Sean Scott, a Las Vegas resident with gambling operations all over the country. Scott was behind the campaign that eventually led to the operation now known as Hollywood Slots in Bangor. He sold his stake in that facility for a reported $51 million. And he also left amid questions by gambling regulators about his business partners and dealings in other states. Scott has largely withdrawn from public view, but he surfaced last fall when his business partners were revealed to be bankrolling an unsuccessful gambling campaign in Massachusetts. Scott's role in the Maine ballot campaign is also murky, but his sister, Lisa Scott, of Miami, has contributed $4 million to the effort so far. There was no mention of Sean Scott in the campaign's first ever written statement issued Monday. Now that Horse Racing Jobs Fairness has qualified for the ballot, the legislature has a chance to ratify the proposal. By tradition, it's more likely to be passed along directly to voters. But Lucchini, who co-chairs the Veterans and Legal Affairs Committee, says lawmakers could hold a public hearing on the proposal.
You know, the benefits of a public hearing would be to understand the thought process behind the bill, see who's supporting it, who's against it, and to really give the public a chance to weigh in.
Lucchini says it's too soon to say if a hearing will happen, but if it does, it could be the first time that Horse Racing Jobs Fairness discusses its campaign publicly. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
In case you were out of town and didn't hear the news or check your Facebook feed over the weekend, thousands of women and men in Maine joined millions around the world on Saturday. They rallied in support of immigrants and women and of values they believe are threatened by the rhetoric of President Donald Trump. In Augusta, Fatuma Hussein, a Somali woman from Auburn, urged a crowd of several thousand to stand up for vulnerable people.
If collectively we all work together, you know, those few people who intimidate us, who create a lot of fear, who think they can dictate to us. Imagine the power we will have to overturn their fear.
For the organizers of the rallies and marches, turning that energy into action is the next big challenge. And joining me to talk about that is Eliza Townsend of the Maine Women's Lobby.
There's so much work to do. One of our concerns, our most immediate concerns, is the nomination of Jeff Sessions to be the Attorney General of the United States. Coming up soon thereafter will be a nomination to fill the vacancy on the Supreme Court. That's an enormous, enormous issue of lasting impact to all Mainers. And we're also very much concerned about the nomination of Andrew Puzder to head the Department of Labor.
All these issues existed before this weekend. What do these marches change?
I think there's energy. I think that I was astounded by the numbers here in Augusta where I participated. And I think that people came away from these events energized and excited and feeling hopeful that and recognizing that action is what makes the change in the world. In the case of the event here in Augusta, it was organized by six women who are not paid employees of known advocacy organizations. They're just people who stepped forward and said, this needs to happen.
How will you and others in the, you know, progressive organization community, how will you turn this into action? What will you be doing in the coming days?
We're offering people opportunities to act. We're reminding them we've had an overwhelming demand for our sort of advocacy 101 trainings. So we are offering those. We have been having discussions about small group discussions with women about how to be effective and how to get involved in advocacy. And at the same time, we're offering opportunities for action through our action alerts and our social media communications.
I was going to ask about social media and other tools. What tools are there that people can use to stay engaged and involved?
If issues related to women and to the full range of issues that affect women are your interest, I would certainly encourage you to follow us, the Maine Women's Lobby, on Facebook, and to sign up for our action alerts. We work primarily at the state level, but we do offer opportunities for action on really important federal issues, such as the nominations and the coming Supreme Court nomination in particular.
You mentioned that the interests of the people who were there on Saturday, where you were in Augusta and around the world, are very diverse. People have very different sort of issues that they feel strongly about. Given that, how do you move forward without just getting in cross purposes?
Well, that's why it's up to each of us to do a little gut check and ask ourselves, what are the issues about which we feel the most passionate? Make an effort to stay informed about issues, and then take action and stay in communication with a network of friends and allies about what's happening and what the opportunities for action are.
Finally, I heard, and I'm sure other people have heard, I'm sure you've heard this question before, rallies and marches are nice and fun and all, but what good do they actually do?
Oh, I think they do. I do think they do good. They serve a purpose. And that is that at least 20,000, perhaps many more than that, Mainers turned out and made an effort, traveled, and marched and rallied and raised their voices for a common set of issues. But the most important one was basic decency and kindness. I think that if I were an elected official, particularly serving statewide office, I would be paying very much close attention to that. I'd be really aware that constituents were exercised. That people don't just give up their Saturdays and travel an hour, 2 or 3 hours for no reason. It means something.
Eliza Townsend is executive director of the Maine Women's Lobby in Augusta. Eliza, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me.
And that's This Day in Maine for Monday, January 23rd, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin, Susan Sharon, Keith Shortall, and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.